Welcome back to the Doomsday Prepper's Guide to the MCAT. It's me, your host, Michael. Who else is going to be on this podcast besides me? So this episode is going to be like the same episode. Basically, there's going to be two sets of episodes. One is going to be unedited. It's like raw. And the other one's going to be edited, where it's just going to talk about the subject, because some people like the conversational side of the podcast, and then some people like the get straight to the points of the podcast, you know? So there'll just be 2 points for everyone, so you're all happy. And some people don't like podcasts, but why are you here? Why are you listening? So in the first episode, well, not the first episode, the first OChem episode, we went over organic bonds in organic chemistry. So what is organic chemistry? Organic chemistry is the study of carbon-to-carbon bonds. Because in the beginning of all the jazz of chemistry and alchemy turning into chemistry, people thought that there was a difference between inorganic chemistry and organic chemistry, and they called organic chemistry. Basically, organic chemistry can be defined as the things that life would use, like life-based chemistry, carbon-to-carbon bonds. They basically said that it has some kind of emergent property that results in life. Well, turns out they were all wrong, like everyone in the past. Both inorganic and organic chemistry are chemistry, regardless of what people in the past thought. It's because carbon, if you look at the periodic table, so you should pause and get out your periodic table, unless you're driving. Some people like to drive with the periodic table on their dashboard. Kidding. Carbon is in group 4 of the periodic table, and so if you take a look at carbon and what's underneath it, there's silicone, then germanium, and then, I don't know, Saturday Night Live, and then lead, and then Florida. I'm kidding, but, well, it's probably fluoridium, who knows? Periodic table. I didn't memorize periodic table, by the way, that's, if you could tell. So if you look at that, each of the elements in that group 4, they have a valence shell that's capable of taking in 4 electrons, so they can complete their happiness circle. And so this means that the less stable elements on the periodic table, such as oxygen or chlorine and fluorine, boron, things like that, they're more capable of bonding with carbon. And so you get these long chains of carbon that form because carbon is considered very stable. Now, there's lots of science fiction writers that talk about silicone, and they're like, well, you know, maybe on other planets there's like silicone-based life. Well, maybe there is, but it's probably like nothing compared to life on Earth, because silicone, because it's so, it's much heavier. If you look at it, its atomic number is 14. This means that its atomic mass is 28, and here to confirm that is Alexa, which I named Amazon. Amazon, what's the atomic mass of silicone?
Silicon's atomic mass is 28.085 unified atomic mass units.
Okay, so basically, there's a decimal place in there because I'm not talking to you. There's a decimal place in there because it's an average, because there's isotopes of silicone. But because silicone is so heavy, it results in less stable of a bond compared to carbon. I mean, carbon's legit, you know? And silicone's not that legit. Silicone's like the douchebag cousin of carbon. Like, he does what carbon does, but no one likes him. So he's not invited anywhere, so he doesn't really do stuff like carbon does. You know, carbon's the cool one. Just don't hang out with silicone. So basically, carbon is so great, it loves to form bonds with hydrogen, oxygen, sulfur, nitrogen, and the other halogens, like the really unstable group sevens. And so that's why you result in these carbon-carbon bonds, resulting in longer chains of carbon, which eventually results in life. Also, we're going to be using the textbook from Caltech, because the MCAT book, it just jumps straight into alkynes and alkenes and alkanes, and it's like, okay, you're just teaching people how to memorize stuff, you're not really teaching organic chemistry, so that's why we're using this. But the book is by Caltech, and I'll post a link to it. It's free. And if you take a gander at, on the left side, the alkaline earth metals, they're very unstable. I mean, you just expose them to oxygen, they blow up. Some people like to throw them into, like, the ocean or something. I don't know. Sounds bad. And then the halogens, they're very stable. That's why they're in all those, like, the gas-like districts in San Diego's neon lights. If you've ever been there, I'm kidding, don't go there. But carbon's so impressive that you can actually create giant-ass molecules with carbon. So, before 2014, the headiest one was polystyrene, which is just another name for styrofoam. And then now it's called PG5, so it's like a PG movie times 5, which isn't PG at all, but still. So that one has like a branch-like structure, like a bunch of trees. It looks like a tree. And that's so great about carbon, it's flexible in terms of how long it can be. Like if you ever just take a bunch of Lego bricks and you line them up and then you like try to make the longest Lego brick ever, if you lift it up at one end, it's so heavy on the other end, it just breaks. And that's why silicone isn't that great, because it's heavier. But, you know, if carbon creates a long chain, like a straight chain, a linear carbon chain, and it gets too heavy, well, most likely it would just like bend a little bit and then loop, and then that chain will just turn into like a really ovally shaped chain, which is more stable in chemical structure. Because that's what every element, what every compound in the universe is trying to get to. It's like the stability, the state of stability. So if you look at the periodic table, if you get something unstable like sodium, and then you get something also unstable like chlorine, well, because one's a cation, one's an anion, they form an ionic bond. And, you know, life is not a bunch of ionic bonds. Regardless of what the people are telling you, you know, adding more salt is not life, even though it tastes great. On the very far side, the other side, a bond between two nonmetals, it forms a covalent bond. A covalent bond just means that electrons are shared equally, and an ionic bond, one steals an electron from the other element that it's reacting with. Then you get something called a polar covalent bond, which we can talk about later because this chapter's about carbon bonds, but a polar covalent bond is just a bond that's, you know, a covalent bond. They're shared equally, but they're actually unshared equally, kind of like, I don't know, US politics. Power is shared unequally. But, yeah, the polar covalent bond, basically, like in water, even though they're shared equally, water is so electronegative, it still pulls hydrogen towards itself. That's it. That's the end of this podcast, because, you know, I'm just coming back into it. So don't expect, like, a long 45-minute podcast. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed it. So the next part, we'll still talk about organic chemistry, because I owe you guys organic chemistry, and I intend to make it like at least an hour long before we move on to the next subject. So tune in.